Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Good morning. You're very welcome to the show. And our panel are here to make sense of that which makes no sense. And we have a crack crisis panel for you today to deal with everything. But let's have a look at the front pages of the papers first. The Sunday Times are saying 60,000 jobs at risk as tariffs scare businesses. Effective President Trump's levies already causing jitters as ministers meet to decide on an action plan. The Sunday Independent have government in crisis mode, public braced for a recession. The Business Post, New World Order, markets turmoil, $5 trillion wiped out in 2 days. Lutnick tells Harris farmer will be hit, and Ireland faces uphill battle on big tech with Europe. The Mail on Sunday have gone with a different story about it's from a whistleblower about they're saying there's an arms dump at Garda HQ. The Sun on Sunday is leading with Dad's My Boy, and Irish trainer Willie Mullins wept with joy after his son Patrick won the Aintree Grand National yesterday. And the Mirror, farewell to a giant of GAA, crowds gathered to salute Kerry's all-time great Mick O'Dwyer. Now, our panel to discuss all that and more, Mary Sadler is CEO of Cool Swan. David W. Higgins is an economist, Oisin Coughlin is a public policy analyst, and Brenda Power is a columnist at the Irish Daily Mail and Sunday Times. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, Brenda.
Mary, will we make this, let's ease into this very simply now. So what's your story at the moment vis-a-vis Cool Swan and Cool Swan moving from Ireland into America and all that? How's all this affecting you?
Well, first of all, good to be on the show. Thank you very much for inviting me. Well, we were hit the last time. So in the last administration, Cream Liqueurs got tariffed.
Was it 25% at that point?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a little bit of deja vu, because under the Biden's administration, it was taken off.
Yeah.
So we went back to...
So they lasted for about 2 years,
was it? Yeah. Yeah. So we're going to hit the same situation. It is a tax on consumers, without a shadow of a doubt, but it does...
You put the price up, yeah?
You have to, yeah.
Now, just very basic stuff, right? Is the tariff, I presume, is imposed on the good at their value when they're coming into the country. So if a bottle of Cool Swan on the supermarket shelf, there's not 25% being put on that. There's 25% being put on a bottle of Cool Swan at the border, which is on about, half the price, maybe half the retail price?
Yeah.
So the 20% this time will actually be 10% of your final retail price is kind of...
Look, pricing is a black art, but it wouldn't be the worst pitch to take at it. Yeah.
And the consumers wearing that in your case, you think?
Yeah, 100. They always will. You pass the tariffs, VAT, they're all consumer taxes. Like, we get dutied every year. Well, alcohol hasn't been dutied in a couple of budgets, but every budget, cigarettes, diesel, they all get dutied.
But I
and that does
that
get passed
it
on.
It depends on, like, what an economist would call the elasticity of demand, yeah? It depends on, are people willing to pay 10% more for a bottle of Cool Swan in America?
Well, you don't really ask them.
But you try it anyway.
Yeah.
Do a lot of Irish products in America, I know Kerrygold's about twice the price, someone was saying to me, of kind of generic butter there, but people pay it and it's still the second biggest player in the market. Are a lot of American... Irish products in America in a premium space where people are relatively price insensitive, that they mightn't die if it goes up a bit.
Yeah. And I'd say if you went today and met American tourists in Irish hotels and restaurants today, they would be astounded at the quality of food they will tell you for what they're paying for it. Because good quality food in North America is way higher if it's made in America than Irish food coming in and imported. So if you're into quality food, Ireland is...
So the Irish premium stuff is actually good value.
Oh, very good value.
How much is a bottle of Cool Swan in America?
Oh, we're giving it away, Brendan, at $32 a bottle.
Okay.
It retails here.
So you could go up to 35, you feel, without too much pain and make the consumer wear it.
Yeah. And you work with your retailers and distributors. It's not just my decision, but yeah, you can. We're quite price elastic. Because if you look at the higher end of a good American food produced at the farm, you know, where people would go to actual sort of shows or go to a farm and buy their food, that'll be another $10 on top of that over and above what I'm able to supply Cwm Swan at.
Okay, so in simple terms again, what are the issues facing you at the moment? So
biggest
it
issue
sounds like you're grand, to be
yeah,
honest.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Biggest issue facing us is working capital, because there's a big gap between I have to pay the duty. So it's the same in Ireland. If I take it out of bond, I pay the government within 14 days. But it could take me, you know, per bottle to recoup that duty over, say, 4 months. So it's going to have...
So when you say out of bond, you have stuff that you've put into America now sitting there, but it's in, I think it's called a bonded warehouse,
yeah, bonded
is it?
Warehouse.
Where you don't pay the tariff or any taxes,
so the government
until you take it out of there.
It, yeah, and then once
okay.
it's removed...
So you built up your stock
yeah,
in America, did
yeah.
you?
Oh, yeah, because yeah. we got caught the last time very badly.
Okay, so it's... It sounds to me as if maybe you're a particular case. Are we all catastrophizing here then?
Oh, no, we're not catastrophizing, but are there ways around it? Yes. Yeah, but we're not catastrophizing. I mean, if you look at my working capital needs now, so say, for example, in 2018, when he put the tariff on the last time, we had a ship, our container was on a ship waiting to dock, 12,000 bottles. And I had to get that money within 48 hours or I couldn't land it in
oh,
North America.
Oh, you had to America. Find the cash.
So I had to find the cash.
Okay.
Now, it took me 4 months to recoup that. But you're recouping it bottle by bottle. So it's not a like for like. So there's really difficult decisions.
So it's a cash flow
the
issue.
Cash flow is a big issue. And also,
there, yeah.
I've only got so much money. You either spend it on staff, you either spend it on marketing. You know, if I'm going to be spending it on finance, that's taken something from my ability to drive the growth in sales in my business. But pricing is a black art. So I would say to you, you're right in that regard. There is some flexibility. There's, you know, but catastrophizing, I'd never think of doing that. But no, there are serious issues to be addressed.
Yeah, like?
Just that. I mean, working capital. Like, and with interest rates going up, that means my cost of borrowing is going up. So not okay. only am I now financing it, I'm now financing it at a higher cost than I was 12
okay.
months ago.
So there are hidden things there
yeah,
that we're
yeah.
not even thinking about
yeah.
yet. David Higgins, as an economist, are we catastrophizing slightly?
I think in the medium to long term, some of the hit that's been announced by the tariffs are a storm that could be weathered. So we actually got off by not having pharmaceuticals hit this time. It might come in the coming days or weeks. But the sectors in the round that are exposed directly to tariffs aren't huge. So, you know, if you add up food and drink, if you add up pharmaceuticals, you add up medtech, you get to around 5-6% or so of total employment in Ireland. You go back to the 08 crash, we had just in construction 11% of our workforce. So, you know, when a sector like that gets hit, it has much bigger ripples across the economy. Medium to long term, I think there's ways around tariffs that are kind of manageable. The bigger crisis, though, I think that we probably have a bit of catastrophizing to do is on a short-term recession, a global recession. Mm. And that's where even if you can sell your product into the US, if the US consumer has had their stock portfolios fall, if they're reluctant to spend, that is the factor that can really choke up markets for all goods and can actually hit employment across all sectors.
Okay. And look, I'm going to try and keep a bit of sequence to the way we go through various issues.
Yeah.
We might come to the notion of recession as we go on. But I see your point. What you're saying is that the tariffs themselves might not be the problem. It might be what the tariffs cause could be the problem.
Yeah.
60,000 jobs at risk as tariffs scare business, it says in the Sunday Times today. What do you think? That's a fair assessment?
I think it's fair when you look at, you know, the pipeline of 5 to 10 years of short term, medium term, long term jobs. But what I think is more at risk is actually a higher number, possibly over 100,000 in the short term, where you have a global slowdown from this uncertainty. You know, businesses really require certainty. And what Trump announced on Liberation Day was a hit to almost all sectors of the world economy across almost all countries and regions. Mm. That is causing a choke up in supply chains and in how people do business across the globe. And that has ripples which will undoubtedly be felt in Ireland and will actually be felt a bit more strongly in Ireland because of how more open and traded we are.
Okay, Brenda, you, I believe, got some consolation from four economists. Wayne O'Connor had a piece in the Sunday Independent, Irish economists weighing in on tariffs war.
Yes, at a time when consolation is thin enough on the ground. I mean, first of all, one of the themes, I suppose, that has come out from all of that I've read this morning seems to be the suggestion that, you know, if it is agreed that these tariffs are an act of self-harm against the US economy, then reciprocating would obviously be an act of self-harm too. So the suggestion seems to be...
Again, we might come to that in more detail.
But the suggestion seems to be, look, let's just wait and see if there's blowback against him in the US. But I'm just looking, just in respect to what David was talking about there, Simon McAllister, who is EY, Ernst Young, head of geopolitical strategy. So he's saying we're more or less at full economy, at full employment in the Irish economy at the moment. So if I want to recruit five people whose skills I cannot source here, they have to be sourced from overseas. They're going to need housing. They're going to need schools for their kids. They're going to need GP care. He said we have already been working with those constraints in the Irish economy already. So he's more or less saying if there is a slowdown in employment growth, and I know that some of the jobs that are being discussed are jobs that may not be created rather than jobs that will be lost. Is that the worst thing that could happen? He's more or less saying this may give us a chance to take a breath, I suppose.
I think that's the kind of thing that people who work maybe in the public sector or people who work in very steady jobs say, that there'd be no harm to have a little bit of a recession, bring property prices down. Like, if people lose their jobs, it's catastrophic for their family and everything else. And there are a load of people out there in the private sector. We can see it today from, there's a poll on Sunday and we'll come to, people are worried. Oisin, you picked a similar piece along those lines in the Business Post about the winners and losers in this.
Yeah, it was just, there's one interesting thing in that before we come back to Trump himself, was that, you know, the losers obviously farm and so on, but one of the winners, it said, was energy, utilities in general, and actually renewable energy, which is kind of surprising given how Trump's been going after that as well. But because the oil price has collapsed, or not collapsed, but gone down for the lowest it's been in a few years, and because there's very few places to safely put your money, investors are feeling actually they're turning, one of the places they're turning is to utilities, that we're always going to need water and electricity. And also, too, because oil is collapsing, or going down, that maybe you go back into renewables because that's a longer term, future oriented bet. So it's just kind of interesting to see that, given this, basically, I think it illustrates there's going to be a lot of unintended consequences here, because we're not sure if Trump even knows exactly what he wants to do.
Yeah.
Is this to raise, revenue? Is this to be a negotiating tactic? Or is this to remake the world trading order? And it certainly seems that, like, people didn't seem to believe he was going to do this, either voters or business people. And he's shown, as once said one Irish politician I know, he has a whim of iron. He's been interested in tariffs for the last 40 years.
Yeah.
And he's now finally, no one's there to stop him, and he's doing it.
Okay.
And it's the largest, biggest trade shock in history, according to lots of economists. It's intentional, unlike COVID or the 2008 crash. It's an intentional disruption of how the world has been economically functioning.
When you think about it, remember we used to talk about, like, what would the black swan be this time? Yeah. We knew it would be something different to what caused the last crisis. Precisely, like, and would it be private equity? Would it be this? No, one man deliberately crashing the world. Before we move on to Trump and what he might want and everything, there's one thing I want to come back to you on, Mary, which is, you picked two pieces. You're talking in one piece in the papers today about that we're the fighting Irish and all that. You picked a piece about dyed-in-the-wool thinking gives way to diversification down on the farm, which is in the Sunday Times, and then a piece in the Sunday Independent about the Blockhams down on the Aran Island making those Inishman jumpers.
I live on a farm. I declare it up front. We are farmers. And just what I think is very interesting is, and what really struck me in the articles, were just a couple of things struck me in the articles. Well, first of all, the consumer is willing to pay once they're aware of what they're getting value for. And that is very true. There's a business called Concept Dairy, and he was trying to lobby the dairy industry to try and get better pricing for farmers, and he was getting nowhere. So he went to the consumer, and he's getting followers, 5,000 a week are following him. The consumer's following him. There's another lady called Sophie Morris that's out there going into supermarkets showing you what's on the back of labels of jars, and she's skyrocketing. So the consumer is very interested in food and getting good quality food.
And
good
are you
value
saying
pricing.
Here that this the dyed in the wool thinking, it's about that producers here start adding value
100%.
As well. And is that about telling a story about Ireland as well? And
partly
about our
telling
products
a story, but
that.
Also helping farms. Technology has been the biggest liberator on farms. So now the farmer isn't just always in lumping bales of hay and feeding sheep and trying to milk the cow. There's quite a bit of technology has taken that over. So the farmer can now start thinking. Yeah, much more strategically. The consumer's willing to pay. This article is very clear. There's relentless supports for people to get out there. But more importantly, what strikes me is, I don't know if anybody has seen, but Bill Gates has been filling the airwaves in the last week with his thesis on where the food supply is going, and it is beyond scary. And if you chose to ignore Project 2025, please do not ignore Bill Gates's view. He's the biggest landowner in the world, and his view is no more animals. They're gone. He's going to raise protein in a petri dish, and he's going to add microplastics to it, and that's what we're going to be eating. And we are sitting where we're sitting because that was an ideology met a leader in Trump. And we are now facing with this disaster, but that ideology is in plain front of us. They've written about this. These guys are been talking about dictatorship.
I'll tell you what, I saw Bill Gates and his successor and the current head of Microsoft in an interview the other night, right? You know, the three guys who know it all and everything. When your man tried to start asking them about Trump and tariffs and what they thought, they didn't quite bend the knee, but geez, they were saying nothing.
Matt Cooper is saying bosses should resign because they all back Trump, and yet their shareholders are being walloped $5 trillion this week.
So let's go back to the question Oisin brought up, David. So as to what does President Trump actually want here, if indeed he knows himself, right? So we've heard I'm going to bring in trillions of money on these. On these tariffs, and maybe eliminate income tax is kind of one of the matters ends of that thinking. Then on the other hand, it's about bringing production back to America, so therefore you won't be getting your trillions of dollars. And then on the extreme end of it, but I don't know how extreme it is anymore, this notion of, I think, you know, this Mar-a-Lago accord that's been going around, that actually this is part of a plan to completely reorder the world economy along the lines of Bretton Woods and neoliberalism, the two previous reorderings, and that means that these tariffs are going nowhere and they're part of that plan. So I know, given that he doesn't know, but do you have any idea? Or what do people think at this stage?
I think the jobs is very much top of it, to have production in the US and to be able to cut ribbons on factories that are, you know, in car space or in pharmaceuticals, that he can say he did and he caused. Because presidents love to claim things as their own, right? He's probably claiming some job losses first, but he want to be able to claim job increases. The idea of a Mar-a-Lago accord, this is the idea that you would devalue the US dollar, that you could potentially restructure US debt, you could lower the bond yield that needs to be paid on US treasuries. This is something that some big Trump supporters have been touting in recent days, that they've gotten the yield down on government debt. Great. But what does that reflect? It reflects lower growth prospects for the US economy. And that's why investors are now looking to say, OK, we don't think yields will be so high. But if your tariffs get implemented over the long term, your yields will probably go up because they are inflationary. And the short term, if the short term job losses in the US and a slowdown in growth, remember what happened during our crash after 2008, people lose their jobs, you lose income tax revenue. Your budget goes the other way, your deficit doesn't close, it tends to widen. So it's hard to see at this juncture us being steered, or the US being steered towards some great strategy here. It feels very much all over the place.
So then, therefore, and I'll come to you then, Oisin. So the question is then, which I saw yesterday, officials were apparently briefing that, no, he's not interested in negotiation. This is what it is. Yeah. So does he want to negotiate on this? Is this leverage, or are these tariffs in his mind right now? This is how it is.
I think he probably wants to negotiate a bit. But the historical picture here is that when presidents come in and they want the tariffs to go up, the tariffs go up. So we will end up by the end of this year with higher tariffs across the board to allies, including Mexico, Canada, already in place.
Mexico and Canada left out of the tariffs during the week.
Left out of additional tariffs. So they still have their tariffs now active because of what was announced earlier in the Trump presidency. And we've now seen in Detroit, there's a company called Stellantis, the parent company of Ram Trucks. They've laid off 900 workers in Detroit, short-term, temporary, they say, but it's related to the tariffs.
Yeah. The day after that poor schmuck of an auto worker was paraded out by Trump to say there's going to be car factories back within months. Oisin, you wanted to come in on this.
I want to give Trump credit for one thing, which is maybe surprising, which is that he is reflecting an underlying reality that the US political system failed to address, which is that the second phase of that liberal order you mentioned, the Reagan-Thatcher phase, did hollow out and accelerated by NAFTA, which I think Ross Perot said listened out for that great sucking sound of jobs going south of the border. It did hollow out or help hollow out the Rust Belt in the US.
Okay, and which was Trump's original kind of
constituency. Yeah, and that's why that auto worker like and those who represents his voters and his base thinks at least someone's listening to our pain and saying they're going to help. Now, whether it's very debatable this is going to help, and in fact there's analysis that says actually it's automation and productivity that is as much to cause the deindustrialization. But, you know, the two political parties failed to address that reality for 40 years and they're reaping the whirlwind of that. And Trump wants to kind of remake that. He won't succeed. I heard that US manufacturing is 10% of the workforce now. Even if this kind of scheme worked, it might go to 12.5. So you're not going back to the 1950s, which that depends on...
No, what people would say services, which he's not interested in, is what drives the US economy now.
70%.
But again, I guess those Rust Belt people are not going off and getting services jobs.
That's the thing to say. You know, if you lose your job in the auto in Detroit, in an auto factory, you're not going to get a job with Meta as a coder the next day. So to borrow a phrase from the 21st century, there was no just transition for those workers who lost out when globalization as a whole maybe lifted US income and maybe lifted Canada and Mexico. Actual families, actual people suffered and weren't.
Mary, you're nodding along there. So, like, Trump has a point here, does
no,
he?
No, I'd never say Trump has a point. I think there was a vacuum built.
Yeah.
And I think there's a huge issue where we are outpricing labour out of the market. Labour is now so expensive an input that it's the last thing we'd consider. And we're a small firm.
So people will do anything rather than hire someone?
Nearly, yeah, because it's coming with such a cost base. And I think that goes back to you've got to have value added. You either have the downtrodden worker being treated very badly on a very low salary, or you have the value add worker where you can put in the overheads because they're bringing something more to the party. So I'm with Oisin. I think the gap, there was a vacuum. I don't credit that man with anything. I think he...
But there was pain. There was pain across vast swathes of
America. There really was,
That the Democrats didn't manage to...
Can I just
to
give
speak
a figure
to?
On that? Because, yes, we're down to about 10% of the US in manufacturing. We used to be 30% back in the 50s. The first decline from 30 ran about down to 15. That big hollowing out. It actually happened in the 70s and 80s before NAFTA and the admission of China to the WTO. And those two forks in the road.
You're refusing to blame neoliberalism for globalization.
Well, we didn't. The decline was very much in place before those trends. And it was partly because the US just moved, people moved from factories into offices. Office work is more attractive. It is safer. And it's something that the US has built up a culture of, well, we'd much prefer to do this than sending our
And we'll outsource all the manufacturing to cheap
to
countries
China,
in China.
Vietnam,
now,
Cambodia.
And now we're slapping massive tariffs on them. Okay, so then, given that, okay, we're still no wiser as to what he might want, I suppose the next thing to talk about is our response to it, the EU response to it. Brendy, you were looking at, in the Mail on Sunday, John Lee and John Drennan are writing about, I think the headline is Battle to Save Our Farms and Farmer, but this is Simon Harris going to meet Lutnick
next
week.
I think the Business Post is also leading on this. He's meeting Lutnick next week. Now he's going to Brussels first, and then on to Washington. And he apparently has had some very encouraging engagement with him so far, and is hoping to.
According to him,
we'll be reminding the administration that 80% of what's produced here goes back to the US in terms of factories, jobs, and added value, and 60% of pharma companies are actually producing for the EU. But there's a line in it that I think this is a little bit self-delusionary, and I think we need to address this. Cabinet sources believe that there's a fondness for Ireland, and that is why pharma was not hit. I think we're a bit silly now if we really do believe that after what happened over St. Patrick's Day. We've got to sort of shake off the notion of Irish exceptionalism in Washington. Don't think we have that many friends there at the moment. I don't think, I think if he did hold off on pharma, it was nothing to do with any grow for Doon Beg. It's because maybe America is a highly medicalised country, and a lot of people reliant on medication. And as somebody else, I think it's one of the economists that I referenced earlier, making the point that, you know, if your doctor prescribes a particular medication, it's not like walking into the supermarket and picking up a different brand of Irish cream. You know, you can't actually get a different drug.
And the point being made in the Business Post as well, I think by Cronel Thomas as well, the point being made that it's actually the US government, if there are price caps on medicines, which there are in America, on proprietary medicines, the US government will be the ones who end up paying the tariffs.
But I mean, I don't think, I think we should stop fooling ourselves now about any sort of, you know,
special relationship or anything
coming into play here.
So in terms of what we do then, David, so there's two schools of thought at the moment, obviously. One is like Ireland is saying we stay calm and do nothing. And then there's a school of thought of like, we got to hit back hard. There's one idea during the rounds that Europe gets together with Canada, Japan, other countries, hit China even, hit back hard and then say, now we'll talk to you in mid-May, right? And that by mid-May, the American economy will be so on the floor that that people will be begging Trump to do a deal.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's always two parts to this. There's the announcement of a policy and then there's the enactment. So we got Liberation Day announced and then it's next Thursday, April 10th, that it comes in. What those countries could do by coming together, and I think should do, is bandy together and announce things, but also hold off on the enactment date. That then probably puts the pressure on the US to not enact its tariffs and that we can kind of push things back for some further negotiation. But what we're really staring down the barrel here of is not stopping or tariffs and maybe even reducing them. It's going to be lowering the additional tariffs that both sides add. I think we are...
So the 10% baseline, do you think that's as good as it gets, yeah?
I think so. Maybe it could be changed for certain sectors. This is where, you know, the exemption for pharmaceutical comes in, maybe something on the distilled sector. There are ways of doing this. I mean, Trump's initial approach to this has been highly simplistic, to produce data on that chart that he did in the Rose Garden, which is not
It's not data. It wasn't data.
It's a suggestion.
You dignify it.
It's a suggestion that the formula came from a chatbot. Literally, it came from a large language model, AI, as to how do you calculate tariffs based on trade balances.
Well, what they did was they did it looking at the trade balance, not the tariff. Yeah. Because if you want to calculate tariffs, it's a completely different formula. And the numbers would be all lower. Trump went with a higher number, but then cut it in half to say, I'm a great guy. I've only hit you guys with half of what you've been hitting us. But that's
the trade balance.
The idea that every bilateral trading relationship you should have in goods specifically without services should be equal is like, makes no economic sense whatsoever.
Yeah, like we all have a 100% trade deficit with our dentist. But that doesn't mean it's a bad relationship. But
so Mary, Oisin, and then I want to ask.
Well, I just think in the context of where Ireland is in this, I think it's less Brexit, where the EU was very much on our side, and more the financial crash, where the EU didn't have much sympathy for us, because we're being seen as very closely aligned with big tech in the US and with the service sector. And I think if I was in the European Union, I mean, great if you can get together with Canada and the rest, but I would be hitting back on services, because apart from the thing that you're showing Trump, you think trade's all about goods. Well, let's see what happens when we start, putting levies on Netflix and on Disney Plus. And apart from that, it's very hard to get consensus on which sectors to hit if you do trade. Whereas the services, I think it's more across the board in Europe. I think you could see Europe hit back, even if you don't push the nuclear button of that anti-coercion measure. You could see Europe deciding to hit back on services, which might not suit us, although it might actually in the short term.
And there are a fair few other biggish countries don't want to do it either. Like Italy seems to be against it, and a few others. So we could have allies in it. Mary, would you, as a businesswoman now, right? So the art of the deal and all this. Would you hit back and hit hard, or would you stay calm and wait and see?
Joe, there's a great expression in business, which is never fight with pigs. You get dirty and they love it. So there's an element of like, how far down the road do you go? If it was a normal administration, I think you would have to be very serious. If we'd real economic concerns about what was going on. We're dealing with a really unusual, like there's no American we're working with that is saying, woohoo, this is such a good idea. We're getting on board with the president. They're not. And I wouldn't isolate the American people in the middle of this.
When you're not dealing with logical people, it's kind of hard to decide what to do, isn't it? Brenda.
Sorry, I was just going to say, I mean, this is a great quote that Oisín had there, a whim of iron. And I mean, the markets rallied a couple of weeks ago with the anticipation of the fact that he actually wouldn't go ahead with his tariffs. So he could, and the Sunday Times making this point in the editorial, given Mr. Trump's volatility, this global assault may be rapidly scaled back. He could change his mind tomorrow.
We'll come back to that in a second. I just need to take a break first. So Mary Sadler, David W. Higgins, Oisín Coughlan and Brenda Power are staying with us.
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1. Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
Welcome back. Our panel still with us. Mary Sadler, who is CEO of Cool Swan, David W. Higgins, economist, Oisín Coughlan, public policy analyst, and Brenda Power, columnist at the Daily Mail and the Sunday Times. This is a really quick clip in terms of, like, is Trump under pressure and are things starting to fray a bit? So this is Ted Cruz. This just emerged overnight. So Ted Cruz, US Senator for Texas, reasonably Trump loyalist to now. And this is him talking on his own podcast.
What happens on this politically is going to be probably the single biggest determinant of what the 2026 midterm elections look like. If these tariffs put us into a recession, 2026, in all likelihood, politically would be a bloodbath.
So that 2026 midterms, a bloodbath, and that is a staunch Republican saying that. Brenda, you picked Gary Murphy in the Sunday Times. Tariffs violate first rule. It's the economy stupid.
Yes, it's the economy stupid. And he's making the point that of all the things that Trump has named after himself, coins, Bibles, trading cards, underwear, whatever. The one thing he doesn't have is any economic policy. He said that changed last week. Now the Trump tariffs. And he said his vice-like grip on the Republican Party has led to a host of politicians who have spent their careers denouncing tariffs, becoming zealot-like converts to a policy they know is antithetical to everything the Republican Party believes in. And he said the history of US is that tariffs rarely work and the electorate vote with their pockets. He's bet everything that the world will bend to his will. A more realistic gamble is that the tariffs which bear his name will sink the world economy into recession and American voters will soon turn elsewhere. I mean, he did not have, as he seems to be trying to suggest, a massive mandate for this. Mm. He was only, I think he got almost 77 million votes. Kamala Harris got almost 76 million. Mm. That means there's 76 million Americans who detest the man. And a lot of
and the ones who did vote for him might be happy about migration, etc. But they didn't sign up for this. I'd say a lot of them.
They're not going to be happy about this.
Yeah.
So I mean, the suggestion being, and this is again across the coverage, is as soon as if he feels that there is going to be any personal blowback to his legacy and to his image from this, that it is actually something that he might reconsider.
So David, like I think. Even over the weekend, the calculus on this has started to change. Trump was saying, look, this is all priced into everything. This has to happen for the time being. Bit of disturbance, but it feels all the time as if he might be slightly under more pressure. And if the markets start tanking again on Monday and Tuesday, that he could, that, like, people are openly saying the only thing that can stop this is for him to recant some way on this.
Yes, and I think it's highly likely that will happen. What he's announced is policy that would, if enacted and held, would just shut and choke up global trade for many years. He's going to have to ease up. The pressures are going to come, yes, from the markets. Financial markets were down about 9%, the S&P, in the past week. We're heading into potentially another week as disastrous if there isn't any change in policy. And yes, Congress, Ted Cruz is as you played, but also the likes of Rand Paul. He's actually one of the few Republicans who has actually been saying, who's consistently held the line that tariffs are not good. Now, the problem, though, is...
Who knew that the libertarians would be the sane ones in the world?
Well, this is it.
We actually have two things happening in America. Tariffs are going up in North America, but go down to Argentina to Javier Milei. He's cutting tariffs. And he's actually leading to Argentina growing. Real wages are growing. Poverty's falling. Nobody said that would happen. And that's because a libertarian came in and actually turned things around there. It goes to show that global trade can be good, but that's out of vogue now.
Do you think there's any chance that this increasing economic pressure, that Trump will find some climb down to save his skin, or will Republicans revolt ultimately?
I mean, yes, it's possible, of course, but it's he never apologises. He never accepts responsibility for his actions. So it's hard to see...
But to be presented as a win in some way, wouldn't it?
There's no immediate obvious thing to latch onto as a win.
I think you're thinking logically.
the only possibility is the negotiations. If it looks like... And there is a bit of this, you know, they're all, even poor Lesotho trying to put together a trade delegation to go to the US to have the tariffs taken off. If there's this sense, they're all coming to me to be get my blessing for what they want to do, maybe he can begin to actually agree to meet Ursula von der Leyen or whatever and say they're bowing their knee even when they're not.
And
put it off for a month while they do
it. It's interesting. A lot of economics people are making the point that this represents the divorcing of actual economics from just a display of political power. And if that's all he's doing, there might be a way of kind of, you know...
But I wouldn't bet my house or my mortgage or my job or my 501k, whatever the pension fund's called in the US, on the fact that he's going to back down. I don't know.
Okay, Mary, have you been in America much recently?
Yeah, we've been over and back a good bit.
And your sense of the mood there, do you think like that it's going to start fraying like, or do you think...
It's hard to read. It's business as usual. There's no discussion about him. There's no discussion about the US economy. We're forecasting forward with our distributors. This was before Liberation Day. I'll be out there again in 2 weeks' time. But when we were on the ground out there over St. Patrick's Day, and that was more the behaviour of ICE. ICE seems to be a bunch of guys that if they weren't in ICE, they'd be selling drugs on the corner of the street. That seems to be who he's recruited.
Okay, and they would dispute that.
They're
all very highly qualified young gentlemen from the tech industry, as far as I know.
You're going to get a press release from ICE now saying that they...
Doge I'm thinking of. ICE are all perfectly good, vetted members of security forces in America, and we do not stand over.
There is a Sunday Times article about passengers to US warned to delete social media apps because of the fact that ICE people at the borders are beginning to check your social media. And there was, a German scientist going to a conference or something, deported because they had said mean things about Trump on their social media.
And who doesn't have something on their social media? Whether somebody sent it to you or you generated yourself.
Brenda, you're going to have to get them to delete the archives of the Irish Daily Mail and the Sunday Times. Newspapers.
Before I can set foot in the place again. This is in the Sunday Times, actually. Irish passengers travelling to the US warned to delete social media apps. It's like flying into North Korea. They will be able to access your social media and any criticism. It was a French scientist, actually, last month was denied entry to a conference in Houston, Texas after immigration officers searched his phone and found messages where he had expressed criticism of the Trump administration. I mean, that could be as simple as a like to one of those many memes that were floating around last week. So, and people are being warned
Mary, that sounds kind of mad. Like, do you think people are... Is that really a worry when you're going in and out of America?
For business, yeah. You'd never...
Really?
When you're doing business, you'd never be carrying around your opinions on your social media.
Okay, so now I'm reevaluating everything you said today. Are you kind of doing a bit of a quiet bend of the knee to Trump?
No, this is long before Trump. Yeah. We would never.
I mean, really?
When you're going in and out of other jurisdictions, you're very respectful of their culture, their behaviours, their habits. We're about to do business in China. There'd be nothing on my phone suggesting, because it'd be kind of disingenuous. Why am I trying to do business with a country that I don't even like? I just want your money. So there is an element of respect when you're in business that you must go in and out and respect the country that you're in.
But it's interesting that we're now comparing China and the US as places where we have to be careful with this. There was a Turkish PhD student who's in Columbia University taken off the street by masked ICE officers this week and moved into a different state or county, and the lawyers are now trying to get her to a court to argue whether or not Rumeysha Ozturk, whether or not the article she published on the Gaza conflict constituted a reason to take... She has permanent residential status in the US and they're looking to deport her.
Okay. Let's move on to our own democracy. And by the way, I saw during the week that there are only 29 liberal democracies left in the world, that three quarters of the people in the of the population of the world do not live in a liberal democracy. So we are very lucky people
left,
when you think about
I
it.
I think it's growing in number.
Not anymore.
It's not left.
No, it's growing for a while, but it's gone, you know, it's going backwards.
But that always, like your problem with the liberal thing is back to me not having stuff on my phone going into America. That's part of a liberal agenda. It's, and that's what a lot of people are pushing back on. It's the same with wages. You know, the liberal agenda is to teach you to fish, not give you a fish.
Yeah,
the
okay.
dictatorship is to give you a fish and then they own you. You know,
okay.
so there is... There is okay, a well, lot well, of
learning.
You know
what?
We'll have culture wars another day. But what I was trying to bring us to was our upcoming presidential election. So there's a poll in the Sunday Independent today, Brenda, and I'll just say that it was conducted on Thursday and Friday, April 3rd and 4th, and the changes indicated are since March 2025 mm-hmm. poll. Sample size was 2,072 people. The margin of error was plus or minus 2.2%. Mm-hmm. So they have been polling on various putative presidential candidates for a while. So what does today's poll
suggest?
Yeah, well,
first of all, bad news for Conor McGregor. Only 7%. I'm astonished. Actually, that 7% say they would vote for him. 90% say no chance. And also, just in case any TDs or local authorities are thinking of supporting his nomination in the interests of democracy, 69% less likely to vote for any TD or any councillor that support his nomination. So I think that's a no there
in terms of that poll suggests, definitely yes.
So what the Sunday Indo did was asked which of these left-leaning candidates would you be more likely to vote for and which right-leaning or, well, right of centre maybe. So Mairead McGuinness seems to have the lion's share of the support on both in terms of both polls at 27%. Michael McDowell would be next in both. He'd be on about 16% on a par with Catherine Connolly. And then I think they've got Linda Martin under the left leaning. I don't know what her particular politics would be other than that she loves dogs. Barry Andrews and Francis Fitzgerald tying on 3%. So, I think this is not a debate or at least a topic that will ignite until we actually have some people in the race. And at the moment, this is all speculation. Yeah. I don't know.
Apart I think people are enjoying the speculation.
Pardon?
They're enjoying the speculation.
They're enjoying the speculation, but it's much more
sport,
fun when it turns into a blood sport.
I mean, obviously, yeah, there's a phase two where it really kicks off. The rest of you were looking at that as well. David, what did you make?
So few of these names are actually declared candidates. Mm. And even the likes of Bertie Ahern is, you know, only speculated. Like, he's just been keeping his name out there. He's in the right lane.
Well, not in any way deliberately. He hasn't suggested he's running in any way.
Yeah. Delphic answers that suggest, you know, keep asking me.
Yeah. He's in the right-leaning camp now. He was a self-declared socialist, I think, at one point. But what are the themes that I think will emerge in the presidency? I don't think it's been good that we had two terms of a president who was a little more divisive, was a little more jumping in on day-to-day issues. I would love to see a president...
No, he's massively popular for
massively,
every time there's a poll done or anything, when he does one of his interventions, a majority of people seem to support it.
Sure. He has about six... Last poll, 64% approval, but Mary McAleese and Mary Robinson had over 90% approval. Mm. That's being a unity figure. I would love to see a presidential term where the next person holds that kind of very high unity
they
support.
Were back in the days of the monoculture too, like the world is more fragmented. No, I don't know, would anyone have 90% support?
Well, the president should be able to do it because
if they speak at all, they'll have over 90% support, I think, is the reality now. Like, if they stay silent, maybe people will be...
Well, if you're going to jump in on day-to-day housing, if you're going to jump in on contentious education in schools, which President Higgins has done, jumping in on Israel and Gaza, you are going to end up dividing people. Mm. I would love to see a president...
Yeah, but the vast majority seem to support his kind of, if you want to call it, reimagining of the role of the president.
Yes, and look, that reimagined role, he's done it in a left-tilt way. Now the door is open for any person to come along and actually do that same approach in a right-tilt way. And I don't think people would be very happy if someone did that. I would love to see someone who goes to the ORIS, does the constitutional duties, represents Ireland well abroad. Mm-hmm. You know, we're talking about global trade and tariffs and how Ireland could potentially find new trade markets. If we have a president who would go out and be a good ambassador for Ireland on that front at a time when we might need to reconfigure our trading relationships, that's the type of person I'd be looking for.
I feel you have someone in mind. Do you want to come out early with your endorsement here?
Well, look, there's a few people that would tick the box there. Certainly the likes of Mairead McGuinness ticks it because she's MEP. She's been, you know, Commissioner for Ireland. Look, there's others in the list that could do it too. But Bertie did the peace process. Sean Kelly's been an MEP. Francis, there's a couple of them there that are all MEPs. So Barry Andrews as well.
A salesperson.
MEP.
I think even... would you like to see a salesperson in there?
I think even more than Micheál Martin's trip to the Oval Office before Patrick's Day, who occupies the ORIS after the election is of very little influence or relevance to actually what happens to the country over the next 7 years. Yeah. My biggest concern is that Conor McGregor won't get a nomination, which is perfectly legitimate under the democratic rules not to get it. And Elon Musk and co. will start tweeting about how Ireland is, you know, that the liberal establishment is thwarting the democratic will of the Irish people by not letting him run. I don't know what the answer to that is. I'm not sure if it's is it a less risk that he runs and gets beaten? But I think that's where this could well be going. That there's a, you know.
But that'll happen independent of the actual race itself. Yeah. I mean, I would have thought somebody like Michael McDougall would get an awful lot of support given the support that he generated around the referendums.
No, and you would have been hand in glove with him on that referendum campaign.
I would. 75% was clear.
Yeah, nobody's denying that. But just to clear your personal interests, like you would have been close to.
Also, I would say that because he is, he's not really affiliated with any party since the PDs, he hasn't been associated with any party. And I would have thought he would seem like certainly a very safe pair of hands, which people want in certain times.
And we'll take that in the spirit in which it's given. David, what else was interesting in this poll to you? You picked the Kevin Cunningham piece, which kind of deals with various issues in the push.
I mean, this kind of comes back to the tariffs. I mean, there's polling in this on, do you believe tariff war will ultimately lead to a global recession? 75% say yes. Do you believe the EU will seek to protect Irish interests? And there's a bit of Euro doubt here. It's 47% no, and that is a risk that we get caught up in a wider set of retaliations that aren't so strongly about our interests. Housing gets some coverage as well. Should the rent cap on 2% increases be abolished? Actually, 49% no. But should ministers be allowed to...
49% no, but give us the...
The yes, the yes 29%? 29 yeah. to 49.
So most people think...
Think that the 2% rent caps should stay in place. There's questions on should the government scrap stamp duty for first-time buyers? That's a 76% yes. And should it be scrapped at local property tax for first-time buyers? 75% yes. Who doesn't love a tax cut?
Okay. Oisin, on the speaking rights row, you picked a piece by Eoin O'Malley there, and there is the poll here suggests that people are... should the government have been dealing with Michael Lowry? 67% no, 21% yes, and 12% don't know.
Yeah, so Michael Lowry doesn't come out well of it. The government doesn't come out well of it, and the opposition should move on. So,
yes, 57% saying the opposition should move on.
But more people support the opposition for how they've handled it than the government. So I think actually, in a funny way, that maybe the Verona Murphy confidence motion would have done this anyway, but the tariffs saved the opposition from the question of whether they should keep going or not. Mm. They knew they couldn't, and actually, I think they got
an off ramp.
Yeah, they got the public with them as far as they could take them. They got the benefit of this, they have succeeded in associating this government with Michael Lowry, which I think is, despite the government's best efforts, because it's still a mystery to me as to why the government went to such lengths to like pretend he wasn't part of the government while giving him all the benefits of being associated with the government.
Okay,
and the opposition has managed to associate.
Yeah, I think John Lee has a piece on that in the Mail today, and he's suggesting that because the voters prize stability. Mary, I think you looked at that piece, did you?
I did. And yeah. I would just say, like in business, it's very hard when you're reading stuff where people say, oh, the government aren't, you know, people are associating the government with Lowry. Like one thing that came out of this poll for me is people want leadership. And it's clear as the numbers go up and down. Micheál Martin did a great job in the Oval Office, given what happened to Zelensky the previous Friday. And I think he did a very good job.
Yeah, no, a lot of people think he should have said things he didn't say.
Yeah, but overall, but
he got out of there alive.
So in that regard, I think it's to me what that poll says is people are looking for leadership.
A kind of a rally round the flag effect. As we get at times of global instability. OK, we'll take a break. Mary Sadler, David W. Higgins, Oisín Coughlan and Brenda Power staying with us.
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
Welcome back. Our panel still with us. Mary Sadler, David W. Higgins, Oisín Coughlan and Brenda Power. Oisín, and this is not connected to tariffs or striking back or anything else, but the front of the Sunday Times has a piece, unpopular Netflix levy set to be blocked, Jennifer Bray is writing.
Yes, so basically the previous government and the Minister, Catherine Martin, were looking for ways to finance, as well as the licence fee, financing RTE, how to finance independent productions and basically Irish content creation, as we now say. And they had come upon the idea of a levy on Netflix and streamers.
It was one of the recommendations of the Future Media Commission, wasn't it?
And they had done the groundwork for it. And the new minister, Patrick O'Donovan, is basically proposing to delay it or scrap it because it would feed through into costs on consumers, on people who download Netflix, and he doesn't want that at the moment given the cost of living crisis. But it's another example. The government refused to grasp the nettle on innovating with how we finance public service broadcasting and public service media by not wanting to reform the licence fee or look for another way to do it, and to start charging people who don't have televisions. And it seems like they're dodging it again here. They don't want to say, if you stream content in here to us, you should contribute to us being able to have a robust public service media. Because it involves charging.
Okay, David, really briefly, just given that Oisín brought it up, and things the government are going to start doing now, are we going to see a complete change in all the promises that were made? Are we going to see more of a concern for protecting people, cost of living, all that kind of thing suddenly become more important?
I think you're going to have to take a cautious approach to the next budget. Things like the electricity credits, I think that was well signalled, they probably won't happen anyway. Luckily, because energy prices are falling and inflation has been kind of flat, we probably don't need to do as much on social welfare rates, pension rates, that kind of stuff this year anyway to keep pace with people's standard of living. But, things like tax cuts, moving the tax bands.
Bit of a squeeze ahead maybe, yeah.
We have to take a call. I'd be going cautious this year. Yeah. Doesn't mean 5 years in a term, you can go big on the future budgets if we get through this unscathed.
Okay. Back to television. Mary, Ardal O'Hanlon has said out loud what everyone is thinking in the Sunday Times. Lauren Murphy has an interview with him and he says there's too much mediocre stuff on TV. You agree?
Yes.
Yeah?
100%. And actually there's one word he uses when he describes his own. He's going out on a tour and his comedy tour and he said, you won't hear my views on Gaza or transgender, but I will be thought-provoking. And I think that's the problem. We're handing stuff up to people. We're saying, there you are, that's the beginning of the story, that's the end of the story, and that's how we're going to view it. Whereas I think we need more satire, we need more yes minister, we need way more thought-provoking. People aren't stupid. They're able to take a bit of satire and a bit of poking at it, and I think that's really important. I think we've moved too far away from it.
This is kind of related to the streaming point. I mean, if I was to do any legislative change on streaming, I would say, look, there's too damn many of them. Netflix, Disney, Apple, we struggle to actually get on all of them. You spend too much money if you're on them. There needs to be like one or two or three of them.
So government regulation, no free market there, David. No?
That was a real Donald Trump moment there. You're going to cut down the streamers. We're going to see streamers. We're going to see fewer streamers than we've ever seen before.
Beautiful.
Brenda, on a serious note, we don't have a huge amount of time, but I do want to touch in on this because I know you think it's an important story, and it is. And that is about Cameron Blair, murdered at a party in Cork, and his parents have been on a campaign, and there is the Irish Mail on Sunday have a piece. O'Callaghan's pledge to see if he can change ruling on child killer anonymity.
Yeah, the Mail have been campaigning very strongly on this over the last number of weeks. Basically, the young man who murdered Cameron Blair was 4 months off his 18th birthday, at which point he could have been named. And the Court of Appeal found that if somebody in his position's case was still proceeding through the courts, if an appeal was upcoming, he could be named
when
he had passed his 18th birthday by the time. But the Supreme Court overruled that and now he cannot be named. So what the Blair family, and I mean, clearly anybody, their heart has to go out to them. They want this guy named. They want this guy identified. They say he was not a child. He has been basically saved by a technicality, and they're calling on Jim O'Callaghan to change the law so as to say, if your case is proceeding through the courts at the time when you turn 18, then tough, you will be named, because that will still protect children. It might take maybe 2 years for your appeal to come on. So the most you're talking about is maybe a 16-year-old at the time of an offence. This is not going to affect, say, the Alec Riggle killers who were 13 or that age child, proper children. But I mean, at 17, you can drive a car. This guy knew what he was doing. And to continue giving him anonymity seems to me very unjust.
And the story there is that Willie O'Dea has said that he was authorised by Jim O'Callaghan to say that he will look at this again. Yeah. Okay. Mary, before we go, you wanted to mention Munster's win against La Rochelle yesterday.
Yes. On a number of levels, but one, mostly because that's the same team that weren't doing well a few months ago. And I'm always fascinated by how a change in management or a change in leadership, come back to Mr. Trump, can change the playing field straight away. I mean, no player has changed on that team, but they went from not being able to perform very well to an outstanding game yesterday against La Rochelle. I feel very sorry for Ron O'Gara, but having said that, I just think leadership, we underestimated. Look at Mick O'Dwyer this weekend. I just think Willie Mullins, there's such examples of leadership out there, and hopefully we won't be too long with the one in America.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Willie Mullins for president.
See about that. Yeah.
You might get a third term, though, you know.
Oisin, briefly before we end, do you want to just acknowledge Mick O?
Well, I think, you know, I grew up in a Dublin household, but I had a Kerry childminder when my mother went back to work, and her husband was a Corpo bin lorry driver. He used to pass our house shouting pro Kerry slogans at us. My father, who was a shopkeeper, would shout Dublin slogans back. So I grew up in that. Before I even saw a game, I knew that this was
the
rivalry of the decade.
Yeah, okay. All right, thanks very much to my excellent panel this morning. Mary Sadler, CEO of Cool Swan. David W. Higgins is an economist, Oisin Coughlan, public policy analyst, Brenda Power, columnist at the Irish Daily Mail and the Sunday Times. Sorted everything there. Well done, guys. And now it's 12 noon and we'll go to the newsroom and Kate Egan.